I was born in Sandy Cove or Glenageary or Glasthool, whichever you want to say. We used to say Dunleary because it seemed to me when I was born in the early 40s, there seemed to be a kind of a fight for the kind of social level of where you were born. Glasthool at that time was the lower level. Sandy Cove was the next one up and then Glenageary was the top. And they're quite reversed now.
Playwright Bernard Farrell was born in July 1941. He is the middle child in a family of three, with one sister older than him and one sister younger.
So we used to say we lived in Sandy Cove, which was the middle one. So I suppose in many ways I was always searching for where I lived, who I was, where I was going. And there was this sort of curiosity about where people stood in social orders very early in my life.
In one way, the social order in Farrell's own family was that of the average 1940s Irish household. His mother was the homemaker and his father the breadwinner, working in Sealink, where Farrell himself would later be employed. In other ways, the family was not average.
I think in many ways we were a very different family from the other families that I knew and from the other guys that I played football with and were friends with. They used to all go to the pictures every Saturday. We were always taken to the theatre. Our mother and father used to take us in every Saturday to see a play, either in the Queen's or the Gate or places like the Garrick or the Focus. And our mother used to always say that the children needed to be fed. So we used to actually leave from Sandy Cove with sandwiches all wrapped up in greaseproof paper and a flask of tea. And we'd be sitting down in the Abbey, which was at the Queen's at the time. And we used to never eat or drink at the interval when everybody else did. We used to eat or drink in the middle of the first act. And our mother used to look across and think, I think the children must be hungry now. So she would open these greaseproof paper, which would be like claps of thunder. And you know how you can't even open a sweet paper in the theatre. She used to do this. And we used to think, oh, my God, she's not going to take out the sandwiches again and mortify us.
Being fed during the first act left time for other things during the interval.
At the interval, my dad used to say, what do you think of the play so far? And the worst answer you could give to him is, I don't like it, because his immediate answer would be, why? Is it bad acting? Is it bad writing? Is it in the wrong theatre? Is the set wrongly designed? And we used to go through all of these things with my father and my mother to a lesser degree. It was a very nice education in theatre without realising it.
So the critical faculties had been sharpened, but what of the writing skills?
I wrote a short story that was published in the Evening Press when I was in fifth year at school, and this was up in Monkstown Park. And I remember bringing it into the teacher and to the English teacher and saying to him, I've just had a story published in the Evening Press. And he took it from me and he looked at it. And he said, I think, Farrell, you'd be much better off concentrating on the curriculum. So that was the kind of encouragement I got from there. But I was always writing, and I was writing poetry for years, and I was writing short stories for years. And then in the mid-70s, this friend of mine said that he was going to go to the Lantern Theatre workshop because he wanted to write a play. And I said to him, why do you want to write a play? We don't know anybody who writes plays. I had never met a playwright. Playwrights were invisible people. But I went along to the Lantern Theatre with him, and he left after about 2 weeks, and I stayed for about 8 months.
Well, there were several playwrights that Joe Dowling brought in around the late 70s, 80s, and one of them was Bernard. And in fact, it was wonderful work on Joe's part, because he found these writers and encouraged them, and Bernard was one. And his first play, of course, was I Do Not Like Thee, Dr. Fell.
Actor Tom Hickey.
The funny thing about Dr. Fell is that it was directed by Paul Brennan and directed very well. We didn't know it was a comedy. We rehearsed it and we worked on the relationships, the situation, etc., etc. And John Molloy, who was playing the caretaker, who comes in from time to time, said to me at one stage, he said, there might be a few laughs in this. I said, do you think so? Yeah, he said, there could be, it could be, you know. And we proceeded on, and then we went and we did a dress rehearsal in the Peacock, and there were about four people there who never stopped laughing. And that was an immense surprise to all of us. And then we did a preview the following night with a very good house, and they never stopped laughing. And they've never stopped laughing since. And I Do Not Like Thee, Dr. Fell.
So the basic premise involved in I Do Not Like Thee, Dr. Fell is that people come to therapy sessions in order to tell about themselves, to tell the truth, to try and bring out their problems.
Director Paul Brennan.
But of course, people do the opposite. when people come to a therapy session like this one, what they do is try and conceal their biggest problems and present themselves as basically okay. And there's one guy in there, and that's the character of Joe Fell, and he's determined to tear away the masks, as it were, that each of the other characters wear and to expose them for what they are. Whether it's the husband who's basically not able to do it, as they say, and the wife who consequently is sex-starved, whether it's the old woman who's pretending to be married and lives with cats, or does she, whether it's whatever, they all have something to hide. All these facades are gradually torn away by Joe, and Joe, therefore, is a volatile, explosive character. And because we don't know what he's going to do next, he brings in a dark edge to the whole thing, which really gives the play much of its appeal.
People have said to me often, are you Joe Fell? And my answer always is, I'm not Joe Fell. I would not like to be Joe Fell, and I would not like to meet Joe Fell in a dark alley on a Saturday night, because I think he's a very dangerous character. But at the same time, I am very fond of Joe Fell. And a really interesting thing happened as soon as I Do Not Like the Dr. Fell opened. There was somebody wrote this huge article in the Irish Times saying, I do not know Bernard Farrell's religion, but clearly he sees Joe Fell as Jesus Christ, a man who came on earth, who revealed the truth to people, who worked kind of miracles, and who was killed for his trouble and who rose again from the dead. Now, there are parallels to all of that in the play, but my God, I was reading this article with my eyes like saucers.
I was in the original production of Canaries by Bernard Farrell.
Ingrid Craigie played Marie in the 1980 Abbey Theatre production of Bernard Farrell's second play, Canaries.
It is the best setup you could have. It's become very common, actually, this setup. It's used in TV, it's used in other things. Put people abroad on a package holiday. Eamon Morrissey was my husband, David Kelly was my dad. We had gone on holidays, you just know from the beginning, you know, I mean, how can you lose? We're all put together in the kind of pressure cooker of a holiday. All starts off wonderfully, the weather's fantastic, and people are having a good time, aspirations, hopes, flirtations, wonderfully observed characters. And then, of course, as with life, when the weather gets darker and rainier, things tend to fall apart a bit.
I was really fortunate that I Do Not Like the Dr. Fell became a huge success and was done all over the place and is in quite a few languages now. And Joe Delling, who was the artistic director of the Abbey, then was very nice to me, and he said, we really want another play from you. And he also said something else to me that I had not thought of. He said, would you ever think of working full time as a playwright? I remember his words. He said, I think you can do it. Now, I had my good pensionable job at Sealink, but suddenly I began to think this way. And I thought, if this new play I write for the Abbey, because I wanted to write it, looks like it's going well, or looks like it will do well, maybe I will think of giving up the job and becoming a full-time playwright. And 2 years before that, this would not have entered my mind. And the play that I wrote for the Abbey was Canaries, which was about the Irish abroad, which was about the Irish social elitist system that I have kind of skewered and gutted for the rest of my playwriting lives. And I think it was a play that I desperately, interiorly wanted to write. And when I finished writing Canaries, I left Sealink, gave up the job and became a full-time playwright.
When I was a young lad in the Abbey,
actor Stephen Brennan.
There were a few other new young lads around, and one of them was Bernard Farrell and the other one was Graham Reid. And it was funny, we always felt that Bernard wanted to be a bit more like Graham and Graham wanted to be a bit more like Bernard, because the marrying of the light and the dark is quite a tricky thing to do for any playwright. And after my brother directed the original production of I Do Not Like the Dr. Fell and the Peacock, we awaited with bated breath the next Bernard Farrell creation, and it was called Canaries. And I played the Spanish barman Carlos in that. And I was noted for being particularly Spanish, for moving about a particular part of my anatomy from time to time, which gentlemen do in hot climates, I believe. It was very authentic. But in that, Bernard had a dig at a slightly darker streak, and it's a tricky thing to do within something that is essentially a comedy, to bring forth a darker level. But he started to pursue that in Canaries. It's there, I suppose, of course, in Dr. Fell. There's a kind of black side to that as well. you know, going on many years later, you'd see it probably most successfully produced in a play like The Last Apache Reunion.
In the early 1980s, I had to write, not had to write, but wanted to write a new play for the Abbey to follow on from Canaries. And just before I left SeaLink, I was involved in a strike at SeaLink. Every day of the week, there seemed to be a bus strike or a rail strike in Dublin. And it was the days of the strikes. And I desperately wanted to write a play about industrial relations. The play that came from it was All in Favour Said No. And it's a play that I love dearly because it sets out to be a farce. It sets out to be a farce that also has things to say about industrial relations and things to say about people and their lives beyond where they work. I think it works really well. And it works well for lots of reasons. And one of the reasons is that there is a union representative whom I called Eddie Malone. And Eddie Malone is your sort of walk-in, what's the story here, lads? And he really has to carry the play and push the play. And he's in among the clerical staff as a guy who worked on the sort of manual labour staff. And that's a situation I was very aware of through working in SeaLink. So I knew what Eddie Malone would be like. And I think I was absolutely blessed because when they came to casting the play, the part of Eddie Malone was taken by Tom Hickey.
Eddie Malone had a catchphrase, which was, OK, fair enough. That's what he kept saying right through the play. Eddie Malone was a shop steward and could see everything in terms of industrial labour problems. There's a sit-in in the offices of this firm, and Eddie Malone is the chief honcho of the protesters. I remember it particularly for one scene, which is one of the funniest scenes I've ever played. Kathleen Barrington, again, who had been in Dr. Fell, in this one she played an office worker, a delicate and very pleasant, harmless office worker who was blind. There was also another character played by Bill Foley. His function a lot of the time was to mind her and make sure she was all right because she was blind. But they also had an interest in light comedy musicals, Rosemarie being one of them. And there is a scene in the play where Eddie, who is under the apprehension that her name is actually Rosemarie, that he doesn't quite get her name, and he hears the two of them talking about the plot of Rosemarie. And then when Kathleen Barrington's character leaves, he says, by the way, I wonder, you were saying there about Rosemarie, where is she actually from? And Bill Foley, of course, speaking about the light music comedy, yeah, she's Indian. She was born in an Indian reservation. And it goes on from there. And it's one of the funniest scenes I've ever played. It used to stop the lights every night. It's a fantastically funny scene.
At this time of my playwriting career, there was part of me that wanted to look at plays that were established and do some adaptations. It was a bit like I wanted to learn from the masters by getting inside the masters' minds and doing something else to them. And I mentioned this to Joe Dowling, who was still at the Abbey at the time. Joe said to me that perhaps Don Juan by Molière would be an interesting one to do. Now, I absolutely jumped at the chance to do this because I admire Molière, as with Feydeau and Labiche and the sort of French comic writers, so much. And I sort of brought Don Juan up to date and gave it a kind of an Irish setting. And I just loved getting into the mind of Molière and to see his trickery and to see his savagery in many ways. And because that worked so well, Joe and I thought, well, what one will we do now on the main stage of the Abbey, Don Juan having been on the Peacock? And I picked out a forgotten play by Dion Boucicault. And it was a play called Forbidden Fruit, which was absolutely forgotten. And when I brought it along to Joe, he said, I've never heard of this play. It's one of the 150 farces that Boucicault seemed to be just churning out at the time. And I think he copied a lot of them from the French writers as well. And I got this play and I turned it into a play called Petty Sessions.
Petty Sessions, I'm really fond of. It's Bernard's version of a play by Boucicault, I think, called Forbidden Fruit, and he called his Petty Sessions, and it's a farce, really, and it's very funny in places. I was only in the last act. I was the proprietor of this dubious hotel where they all met when they were having affairs, etc. But there was a time in the Abbey at that time, because I was rather severe on furniture, I was known by a lot of the stagehands as Standby Hickey, because I broke chairs and doors. But I sort of got infected in some hysterical way about standby props and everything like this. I wore a black eye patch as Victor, and I had a scene with Stephen Brennan in which he comes into me frantic because his wife has just entered the hotel and he's about to be discovered, and he wants to borrow my black patch as a disguise. God help us. And I give him this black patch, but in taking it off my own head, the elastic broke, and it was absolutely useless. It was clear it was useless. However, to my right-hand trousers pocket I went and brought out another one. It got around from the audience. The thing about Bernard's plays is that we always enjoy them because you had great fun not only rehearsing them but doing them.
Jim Nolan was artistic director of Red Kettle Theatre Company in 1991-92, and he had come up with Bernard's play, 44 Sycamore, and I'd worked for the company before, so he thought, why not bring together again the team who produced I Do Not Like Thee, Dr. Fell back in 1979. But now I found myself dealing with a playwright who had several hits under his belt, and not the novice playwright I'd found back several years before. Basically, that meant that he argued the toss more. And we, of course, argued our way to a very equable solution to everything. But at the time, it was really interesting to see the change. But once again, the approach that I wanted to take, as with I Don't Like the Dr. Fell, was that the characters were really rooted in reality. That we didn't just go to play the type, that we actually went to investigate the individuals involved in the play, and not to fall into the trap of really just taking a play that is, at the end of the day, a light comedy, too lightly. So we ended up bringing as much depth as we could to the play, but having the effect, nonetheless, of really producing a lot of laughter for an audience who, down in Waterford, really appreciated this show. And the production was such a success in Waterford that it transferred to Dublin and was equally successful there.
I think that because I was newly married myself, and myself and Gloria, my wife, had moved into a new estate out in Greystones, and we had seen exactly what we were doing. We were the vandals. We were the barbarians coming inside the gates. We were moving into beautiful green fields, and we were sticking up our houses. And at the same time, we were pulling the ladder up behind us, thinking, you know, Greystones has to be preserved as soon as we build our house. And I was terribly aware of all of this. And 44 Sycamore is about that kind of thing. And there is a man in it called Mr. Prentice, whom nobody likes. All these sort of yuppies who have moved into the area and who have given the estate the right name, like Sycamore, or Westminster Downs, or Devon Close, but nothing that would reflect their own backgrounds, like Doonery Lodge or something like that. Like, it had to be kind of slightly British and that kind of thing. With all of that, there is this man who lives in the estate called Mr. Prentice, who is one of the old brigade and who remembers the fields where the fields were. And not only that, but he remembers what happens there, who died there, what used to be there. And he has this great thing of, I suppose, in a strange way, that Joe Fell did many, many years ago. He begins to expose the superficiality of the people who are coming into this place.
I appeared in Bernard Farrell's play, The Last Apache Reunion, in 1993 at the Abbey Theatre.
Actor Frank McCusker.
And the play was about five schoolmates who are now in their sort of late 20s, I suppose. And they meet up in a pub along with their wives and, you know, ostensibly to have a nice night and have a bit of fun. But on their way home, they break into the old school classroom and begin to reminisce even further. Nick, who is the character I played, is married to Jackie, and Jackie would have been part of their set at the time when they were at school. And Jackie had been a girlfriend of Podge, who was one of the five chaps, and Podge is a farmer from the country. Nick, on the other hand, has gone off to London to become a fashion designer, so there's an immediate tension there between them, heightened by the fact that he used to go out with Jackie. So it moves on from there, and as the night goes on, the drunkenness continues and they get ever more drunk and certain darknesses are touched upon. Nick in particular is very threatened by this. There's hints about them having bullied this young boy at school when they were all together. And one of the five has had a real sort of fascination for old Super 8 movies, and he is a sort of failed priest and is not married and has clearly been very screwed up by what they did back then. But more to the point, he has captured some of it on tape. So to cut a very long story short, the tension rises. It looks like this film is about to be shown in front of his wife and everybody else. And the suave, sophisticated guy that he seems to be may well be revealed to have a greater darknesses inside him. So he excuses himself, goes out to the loo and comes back with a bottle of sulfuric acid, which at the denouement of the piece, Nick throws in Podge's face. But in classic Farrell theatre, it is not actually sulfuric acid. It was water with little bits of meringue in it. But at the moment that it happens, which is what I found about playing that character and what I think is true of Dr. Fell as well, is that at the moment of that drama, at the moment of that extremity, it kind of has to be played for real, completely played for real. Because in a way, what it represents is something real, even though it isn't. And Farrell, I don't think, is letting his audience off the hook, or he isn't sending them home happy. I think what he's doing theatrically is he's leaving this thought, I think, which is that that character, who will continue to be a civilized, nice, sophisticated man once the story has been packed up, might reasonably have thrown sulfuric acid in his friend's face.
Michael Colgan and I have been great pals for many years, since in the very early 80s we went to the Berlin Theatre Festival together. And that in itself is a play, and I think I'll wait until Michael is dead before I write it. And Michael used to say to me whenever we meet, you know, there are other theatres apart from the Abbey and Red Kettle. There is the Gate. And I said to him at one stage, I will write a play for the Gate. And I kept my promise to him, and he kept his promise to me, which was, if you write a play for the Gate, I promise I will put it on.
Well, I played Stella in Stella by Starlight, Bernard's first play in The Gate.
Actor Marion O'Dwyer.
Stella's thing was that her eyesight was very bad, and her husband Dermot is constantly trying to get her to wear her contact lenses. So that's Bernard setting up the premise, as he classically does. He sets up the comedy immediately by giving you what the problem's going to be. In most of his plays, the premise is set up, then there's a problem, some sort of glitch, and then you have the comic moment, which of course is the payoff. And for Stella, there's many a comic moment where her eyesight failing her leads her into some murky waters. And one of the scenes where this works to great effect in Stella by Starlight is where Stella's been off stage, and because she hasn't got her glasses and she's been out in the mud and that, hiding from the visitors because she's not ready, and she ends up tripping and making a disastrous entrance covered in all sorts of detritus, and thereby letting down the myth that Dermot is trying to create, that they're living this cosy country life.
There is a theatre out in California called the Laguna Playhouse, and they have done the American premieres of a lot of my work. They said to me, could we commission you to write a play just for us, for nobody else? And I remember when I heard these words, I was thinking, OK, I started in the Abbey and then I moved to Red Kettle and then I moved to the Gate to write plays. And the plays have been done, thank God, around the world, and they've kind of moved out, and I seem to be moving out and out, but I've never written a play that was not first written for Ireland. And it scared the living daylights out of me because I thought, I know my Irish audiences, and if other audiences agree with the Irish audiences, then the play travels. But if I write a play that's for a foreign audience, will I be able to do it right? And if I don't do it right, it'll be a huge disaster. So I said, yes, I'll do it, which is the kind of the risk area in which I lead my life. And I have now written a play that's going to open the 2nd of June of this year out of the Laguna Playhouse. And it's a play called The Verdi Girls, which is about people who travel to a Verdi convention in Milan. Some of these people are American, some of these people are Canadian, some of these people are English, and of course, some of these people are Irish. So it's like the international Dr. Fell in many ways, that I'm pulling them all together. I'm able to go back to my childhood, to my parents' great love of classical music, because I get a great chance to play the works of Verdi, whom I love. And it's also a chance to push out into the outer world and to see what I can do and to see how well I do it.
Well, clearly, with many of Bernard's plays, there are, you know, dark situations and there are rather serious issues being discussed.
Former artistic director of the Abbey Theatre, Ben Barnes.
But I think that one of the great things that Bernard does in his plays is he creates a situation where people have to behave in a particular way, whether that's a class reunion or a wedding anniversary or whatever it may be. People are expected to behave in a formal way in those situations. And I think a lot of the comedy arises out of that. I think Bernard makes his serious points in a comic structure and in a comic vein. And the plays usually work towards a rather hilarious and devastating denouement on each occasion. But I think that he nevertheless, and I think that commentators and audiences have always acknowledged that, you know, that serious social points or political points are being made in Bernard's plays as well.
I can never write a play that won't be funny. And I write many plays that are very dark. I think the downside of it is that because there would be a lot of laughter in the theatre, that people are inclined to think, well, it's just a joke and I can tell a joke and I can write funny things and I can be as funny as Bernard Farrell is. And I think a lot of them miss the target by miles, and that can be a bit infuriating. And I do put things into the plays that are very subtle and amid all the humorous cross-examination and backchat. And they're usually missed, and that can be a bit annoying. But that is the way I write the plays. All the plays will always be humorous. I think there'll always be a dark side somewhere there. I often think it's like baking a cake, I think, that has an ingredient in the middle that I want people to taste, but that's not very palatable. So I put the icing on the top to make this unpalatable thing edible. And in some of the plays, there's a lot of icing. And in some of the plays, it's nearly all icing. And in some of the plays, the icing is very, very thin. And that's when you have to take the dark side, whether you like it or not.
The playwright in profile was Bernard Farrell. The contributors were Ben Barnes, Paul Brennan, Stephen Brennan, Ingrid Craigie, Tom Hickey, Frank McCusker and Marion O'Dwyer. The programme was compiled and presented by Sean Rocks and produced by Kevin Reynolds. Next week, the playwright in profile will be Tom Kilroy.